This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. This month, the New York City subway system turns 100. The subway wasn't America's first underground transit system, but it became the nation's largest, and it transformed the country's largest city. In the first of a series of stories to commemorate the anniversary, NPR's Robert Smith traces the history of the subway as the rest of the nation experienced it in movies and song.
The year is 1949, and three naive sailors have just arrived in the Big Apple for shore leave. They don't know what they want to see, but they sure know how they're going to get there.
New York, New York, a wonderful town. The Bronx is up and the battery's down. The people ride in a hole in the ground. New York, New York, it's a wonderful town.
As the nation saw in movies like On the Town, the New York City subway, that hole in the ground, was more than just public transportation. It was its own world of romance and danger. Place with all the hustle and bustle and excitement of New York City, shoved into a tightly packed express train. And so it was even on the opening day of the subway system 100 years ago, when a newspaper man at the time wrote that New York City went subway mad.
There was a crescendo of excitement in the months leading up to the opening on October 27, 1904, and it was a buildup that didn't have a letdown.
Stan Fischler wrote a social history of the system called The Subway in the City. He says the novelty of underground travel prompted parties and a new dance craze, the Subway Express Two-Step. In that first weekend the subway was open, an estimated 1 million people rode back and forth from City Hall to Harlem.
It was a smash hit. Unfortunately, because it was a smash hit, there was overcrowding.
And those crowds became as much a part of the subway experience as the speed. In 1907, Ada Jones sang about newlyweds who were separated in the jostling humanity underground.
He loved her in the subway down at the City Hall. He married her that morning. That night he had no bride at all. Just think of his dilemma. No honeymoon that day. Oh, me, oh my, I could cry. He loved her in the old subway.
Despite the early newspaper complaints about the sweat and the smell of the trains, the popular depiction of the subway in the 20s and the 30s was as a romantic dreamland. In the Busby Berkeley film Dames, a young couple stares into each other's eyes on the subway, and the crowds around them disappear from view. What viewers didn't see in those movie fantasies was the way the growth of the subway was transforming the city above.
Almost any section of the city is within easy walking distance of a subway station. And by subway, one can travel to most points in the city, quicker and cheaper than by any other way.
The subway created new neighborhoods far from the center of Manhattan. Vacant lots in the Upper West Side and the Bronx sprouted apartment buildings. Immigrants were finally able to move out of their crowded Lower East Side tenements to the open spaces of Brooklyn and Queens. And with that demographic shift, the subway lines started to develop their own personalities. In the 1940s, Billy Strayhorn celebrated one particular route, incorporating train syncopation with the subway directions to Duke Ellington's apartment.
You must take the A train to go to Sugar Hill, way up in Harlem. If you miss the A train, you'll find you've missed the quickest way to Harlem.
By mid-century, the subway had gone from those first 9 miles of track to more than 600, reaching all corners of New York City. The confusing mishmash of letters and numbers and transfers led to a new underground language. Historian Stan Fischler used to ride in from Brooklyn in the 40s and 50s, and he says New Yorkers prided themselves on a sort of subway savvy.
Subway savvy meant if you had a blind date in Bensonhurst and you lived in Williamsburg, you knew where to change and how to get there as fast as possible. It becomes second nature.
It's uptown by local to Van Cortlandt Park. Wake up, get out, go up, cross over, go down, get on.
A Broadway musical from the 1960s, Subways Are for Sleeping, was a love letter to the strange world that had sprung up underground. But despite its hold on popular culture, by the 1960s, the subway was starting to show its age. New Yorkers were moving to the suburbs, and public investment was being redirected to highways and bridges. When the subway appeared in the movies of the 70s, the cars were dark and decrepit. Crime was everywhere. In the film Taking of Pelham 123, criminals hijack a number 6 train.
Now then, you'll all remain seated. Anybody who tries to rise is going to get shot.
The jaded New Yorkers just laugh. The Taking of Pelham 123 captured the flavor of a city that had given up on its subway system. In the movie, New York was bankrupt, the mayor was a joke, and the transit authority didn't care.
Get off of it, will you, Frank? My only priority is saving the lives of these passengers.
Screw that damn passenger! What the hell do they expect for that lousy 35 cents to live forever?
Oh, yeah, beautiful.
The passengers survived, but Stan Fischler says that in real life, the subway system just got worse.
Every single train on the system was covered with graffiti. It was the most depressing era that I ever experienced as a subway rider, and remained that way for a good 20 years or so.
In the 1979 movie, The Warriors, you see the subway completely taken over by gangs, terrorizing passengers and spray-painting the subway cars.
You got the stuff? I want you to hit everything in sight. I want everybody to know the Warriors were there.
And just when New Yorkers thought that the perception of the subway couldn't get any worse, along came radioactive zombies in the 1984 film Chud.
A cannibalistic humanoid underground dweller. A Chud, all right?
The cleanup and the rebuilding of the subway system took a decade and millions of dollars of reinvestment. It took even longer than that for the image of the subway to recover. But slowly in the 1990s, as the graffiti and crime disappeared, TV and movies rediscovered the offbeat charm of the subway. On Seinfeld, Jerry wakes up on a Coney Island-bound train to find a large naked man sitting across from him.
You realize, of course, you're naked.
Naked, dressed, I don't see any difference.
You ought to sit here. There's a difference.
And in movies and ads, romance returns to the rails. The subway stations may not be filled with dancing girls, like in the 1930s, but it's still a place where lonely people can be pushed together and fall in love. In the film Subway Stories, an older woman flirts with a young man.
You know what I like about the subway? It's like there's a whole different world down here. I almost always meet somebody I can connect with.
For the millions of New Yorkers who commute on the subway every day, that kind of seduction may seem as unlikely as the subway musicals of the 40s or those cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers of the 80s. But these stories do capture an essential truth about the subway over the last century. Like the city it serves, the New York subway has a sense of adventure, a feeling that anything can happen. And at least in the movies, it usually does. Robert Smith, NPR News, New York.
To hear more songs about the subway and see photos of Hollywood's changing image of the New York City Underground, you can go to our website, npr.org.